concerns or topics that they would like to discuss tonight, please give me your call sign and your first name.
WS2N, all quiet there. Roy, you're doing great, though. You're booming in tonight.
Ah, good to hear, Paul. You know, it's times like this that I wonder if I'm getting out, although I have all these little controls and displays to show me my waveform to indicate if I've done something naughty and timed out the repeater. So I kind of thought that I was getting out, but you never know. I guess, I don't know, it's not like there's something special going on tonight. It's not like it's the Oscars or the Emmys or the Super Bowl. So not quite sure what's getting everyone's tongue. I'll offer our services here. This is the Limark Technical Net, and it would be nice to discuss something technical. I mean, all things being equal, I'll move on to the science talk if no one's particularly interested tonight.
Whiskey 2, Bravo Zulu.
Yes, Rich.
I was just wondering what was happening on 10 meters today to make it so active. I mean, was there a skip going on? Or are we looking forward to a summer of some longer distance conversations on 10 meters? Is there anything special ionospheric wise happening on 10?
Well, it wasn't only 10 meters. 6 meters was kind of jumping as well, and there was a contest on 6 meters, so that was kind of driving it there. Although, you know, if it's dead, it's dead, but it was doing very well. And 10 meters, usually I will turn to 10 meters at Sunday morning at 11 a.m. and see absolutely nothing. There's a gentleman down south who has a CQ recording of himself endlessly throwing out CQs, and I haven't heard him for a couple years. But sure enough, I saw about 5 different QSO conversations out there, and the guy with the recorded CQ was playing his CQ, and it was a lively thing. I do not believe it's a trend, unfortunately. I think there were a couple of random sunspot activities recently, and there might have been a little bit of a sporadic E as well. So I wouldn't pitch a tent and expect this to go on forever. I just enjoyed it while it was happening. I'm used to running a very local 10-meter net. We usually talk to people in as far as New Jersey. Occasionally, one person will show up from Florida, but that's about it. But today blew the hinges on that record. So I'm thinking that it's a little sunspot activity but and a little sporadic, a little bit of this and a little bit of that.
KD2AMZ.
Yes, AMZ.
Oh, thank you, Mike, KD2AMZ. Well, for whatever it's worth, I was just on 80 meters to a net that I used to frequent quite often in Virginia. It's called the Virginia phone net on 80 meters. And for months and months and months, I couldn't hear my friends in Virginia. But today, I actually heard them reasonably well, and I was able to get into the Virginia phone net today. So maybe some activity is picking up.
That's good to hear, Mike. That's 80 meters, you say?
Yes, sir, 80 meters. I mean, 80 meters is okay for relatively local, but I have for months, literally months and months and months, nothing going down to, you know, I couldn't get my friends in Virginia on 80.
Okay, very good. I'm glad to hear that. Usually, unfortunately, the lower bands suffer a bit during a high ionization. You know, it's kind of a strange thing that goes on. The D layer is actually absorptive and generates noise and limits your ability to propagate, you know, 80 meters and such. So that's why it's so good at night and so terrible during the day. But I'm glad that you had good luck as well.
Thank you, sir. 82AMZ, back to that. Just wanted to give a quick comment on 80 meters. Actually, 40 meters has been hopping too lately.
Okay, very good. This morning, it really wasn't, but I don't expect it to hop, 11 o'clock. 6 meters was going strong. 10 meters, as I mentioned, was going quite strong. 20 was okay. I mean, 20 has been in the doldrums for a way too long a time. And 40, 11 o'clock in the morning. So thank you for that, Mike. Once again, I am Roy, AC2GS. This is the Limar Technical Net. And if anyone would like to either discuss any technical concepts or make any, questions or answers or what have you, please give me your first name and your call sign.
Whiskey 2, Bravo Zulu again.
Yes, indeed, Rich.
You've been, something weird's happening with my radio now. It won't let me transit, and I've been playing with menu settings all day, but won't let me transit unless the carrier, the signal is the frequency is completely free. Anyway, you've been listening to the low band for a long time. Excuse my 1 second. Hi, Frog. You've been listening to the low band for a long time, and I'm wondering what your prediction is, or cannot make one now. It's too early. When there'll be definitely two shows on 10, 15, 17, and 20 on a daily basis. Can you make a guesstimate? Are we looking at a year? Are we looking at 5 years? Anyway, from what you've heard on the band, there's any way to make even just a guesstimate?
Okay, Rich. Well, we kind of know that pretty much the solar cycle, as far as we are aware of, is an 11-year cycle. So that means every 11 years is a new peak, give or take. Our minimum either was sometime last year or about an hour and a half from now. So that means that give it a good 5 years and we'll be close to the peak again of maximum. It's not like someone turns a spigot on, unfortunately. It's more like a leaky valve, and it gets more and more leaky as time goes on. So my guess would be, if the, and it's just a throwing a guess on the wall, is that it's going to take a few years at least to get any kind of consistent activity, probably 3 or 4. Then by about 5, it's going to be crazy, and we're going to have lots of fish stories to tell each other, and 6, it's going to be pretty good, and then we're going to go back down to a minimum.
Cycle, a low within a lower low or something like that?
Well, these things, 20, hindsight is always 20/20. So when the guys write the history book, they're going to be absolutely right, hopefully. Right now, it's anyone's guess. The people are discussing that the next maximum is going to be a rather pathetic thing. Our last maximum was a little weird. Usually, we have one peak. You can chart the sunspot episode. Okay. Once again, this is AC2GS, and I'd really like to have a technical net here. I also do a technical net on another repeater, just because I'm a glutton for punishment. And this is starting to sound a lot like some of those, unfortunately. It doesn't start very gangbusters. It has to work its way up on that repeater. But nevertheless, If anyone out there has any comments or any technical questions or discoveries that they made that they'd like to share with us, or unusual experiences, or, you know, if they found the band hopping like hardly never before, please give me your first name and your call sign.
Bernard, KC2NKL.
Yes, Bernard. Yes, NKL, Bernard.
I have a question for you, and I'm sorry for the noob question, but a rookie. I've had my ticket for a long time, but I'm still a rookie, and I'm still learning every day. I do have a question about digital modes on UHF, VHF. I have one of those new Yaesu FTM 400 XDRs, and what I'm finding is that I can't. I never seem to make any contact on any of the fusion radio, any of the repeaters that are using the fusion radio, the digital. And I'm just wondering, to make a long story short, and I apologize for all the noise in the background, but I was wondering if the repeater that's running in digital is supposed to tone to let you know that you've actually hit it.
Well, I think there is an acknowledgement, handshaking that goes on the digital mode. I have an FT400 as well, and fusion repeaters are enabled to either do analog or digital. So you might want to make sure that your radio is set to the proper setting. Otherwise, it can send the wrong signal and confuse the repeater. Especially with the FTM400. You can set it for FM, you can set it for digital, or you can kind of set it for whatever it hears from your repeater. So you might want to make sure that you've switched it over to the digital mode completely so that it doesn't give you the option of switching back and forth in analog. Another problem, though, that you might be having is a lot of Wires X rooms are kind of locked down. At the very beginning, people just kind of left it open, but now because of hotspots, the people who run repeaters often will lock them down to specific rooms. I have a club that I belong to in addition to Limark, the Kings County Radio Club, and we have a Fusion Digital Technology repeater. And over the years, we've locked it down to just our own room, the KC2RC room. So that might also be one of the problems that you're addressing.
Yeah, I guess that's where my confusion pops up, too, because when I first got this radio, I thought that Wires X and Fusion, I kind of reversed them. And I can get on a Wires X repeater and see the rooms and connect and talk all day, and that seems to work just fine. It's when I'm just connecting to a Fusion that's not a Wires-capable repeater, where I seem to never be able to make any contacts. But what I've done is, when I'm in the digital mode, I make sure it's on the I think it's DM with the line over it. And on all these repeaters that have the analog and the digital running at the same time, what I find is that the automatic is switching me over to non-digital mode, and I'm never talking on digital, even though the repeater's digital capable. Anyway, this is KC2NKL Friday.
Okay, that's interesting. The owner of the repeater can set it for a series of different protocols. I think they can lock down the analog or lock down the digital, or they can, I think it's the AMS is the initials that Yaesu uses for that flip-flop between the two. That's curious. It might simply be that the repeater is not terribly active. Unfortunately, a lot of analog repeaters are not terribly active. I was amazed when I first got my license and I pulled out a repeater book, you know, the repeater list, and I went down them, and about 80% of them were unresponsive. And some that were responsive, at least, that it would respond to your keying, no one was answering because no one was listening. I got to the point where I actually wrote up an article that I've published all over the place that I call The Hitchhiker's Guide to New York City Repeaters, just because of that problem. So I don't know for a fact, but maybe it could be something as simple as it's a very underused repeater.
Yes, sir. I'm going to drop to see if I have it. Last question I'll ask. I have probably a million of them. I could spend the whole night talking to you and asking you questions, but I'll keep it brief. So when I'm programming the radio, one of the things I also notice is that I have my tone mode, and I'm just wondering on the ones that are fusion capable, do you set the tone to detone, or do you just set the tone mode to off?
Well, you shouldn't need to bother with it. The tone is for the analog frequency channel. The fusion itself does not use a PL tone. There are a lot of people out there, and I understand, they get very annoyed because they have radios that aren't able to deal with the digital transmission of fusion. So when they have scanners or they have other analog radios, it breaks the squelch, and they get a lot of noise, and it's a pain. So I tell people that if they have the ability, and some radios, unfortunately, do not have a tone squelch. If they have the ability to tone squelch for something that is a fusion digital radio, they should certainly use that feature because it causes a lot less headaches. But as far as I'm aware, there is no PL tone associated with the fusion portion of that repeater function. It operates purely on digital headers.
Yeah, Roger, that makes sense. That's what I thought as well. I just didn't understand why my programming software had the option to changing the tone mode to detone. And so I was always kind of curious why it would have that and if it was something I was just doing wrong in the digital mode. Anyway, so I appreciate you taking the time to answer my questions. I will try not to eat up the bandwidth on all the questions I have. So thank you very much. I appreciate your expertise. KC2NK.
You're very welcome, Bernard. And, you know, I mean, that's the whole point of this net is to talk about problems and questions and topics. So, you know, please feel free if everyone sits around listening to us. I would love to answer some more of your questions, but I'll throw it out again to the rest of the people out there listening to the Technical Net. If you have any topics you would like to discuss or be discussed, or if you have any technical questions that you would like to have people talk about, please give me your first name and your call sign.
E2BC again.
Yes, Rich.
Your remark about tone squelch versus tone, could you explain those two?
Okay, a lot of people use a lot of different terms for pretty much the same thing. Encode, decode is a very popular term. Most of the time, people are only interested in applying a PL tone. PL tone is really a trademark privacy line. It's a subaudible audio tone that allows a repeater to get triggered by your transmission, and it was used as repeaters lit up the infrastructure across the United States and elsewhere, and sometimes the same frequency allocation would be a little too close for propagation conditions, and someone could try and trigger repeater A and end up triggering both A and B. So that's a PL tone. That's an encoding a tone. There is a feature called tone squelch, which allows you to only undo the squelch when you receive a radio signal that also includes a specific subaudible audio tone. So that's a tone squelch. Most people then tend not to use the tone squelch. It's enough to just use the regular squelch, and when the background noise, you know, falls down because of a frequency, a carrier, FM carrier, it'll trigger, it'll cut off the squelch, and you'll hear the signal. But in the cases of devices that also transmit on analog and digital on the same frequency, that becomes a nuisance. And so for those types of situations, tone squelch is a very, very useful feature. What happens is if a person is transmitting on that frequency in analog, it produces a subaudible tone that breaks the squelch. But if they transmit in digital, since the digital doesn't have an embedded subaudible tone, it doesn't break the squelch.
But that's a very rare circumstance. Am I not correct?
Yeah, it was certainly incredibly rare before the advent of fusion digital technology. I think when it was first implemented, it was sort of a belt and suspenders, that if for whatever reason the regular standard squelch was insufficient for your purposes, you could always add an additional safety feature by enabling the tone squelch. Now, not all radios, unfortunately, have tone squelch. And also, some repeaters, for numerous different reasons, have different subaudible tones. Their PL encoding tone is different than their squelch tone. And a lot of radios are not designed for two different tones. You can either set it, a lot of radios that have this feature, you set the tone, and then you set whether it's just a simple tone tone or a tone squelch. So different radios have different abilities. But yeah, it's rather rare. Most people don't use it. Most people have forgotten that it exists unless or until they read the manual. But it's there in many, many different UHF, VHF radios.
By the way, I've been playing around with this radio today and played around enough with it until I got to the point where unless the repeater is completely dropped, I cannot transmit. Do you know what that is, or do I have to just go through 400 different features on this thing just to find out what I did?
Well, that's a new one to me. I mean, maybe someone out there is much well-versed on it. With digital radios, that's a common feature. There are busy signals and other indicators that when you hit that push-to-talk button, if the repeater is not enabled, that it's not receiving another signal, it'll bark an error statement at your repeater, at your radio and such. But I don't know exactly what would cause that on an analog-type system. I mean, in some ways, that might be a useful thing because, people jamming would have to be the first signal in. But as long as your signal is strong enough that it captures the repeater, I would think that it should trigger everything unless there's some kind of problem with your subaudible tone not being as strong as maybe it should be, and so it's kind of at the border that you need a somewhat stronger signal to kind of trip that aspect of the repeater.
Don't have a clue, but it's a new one on me, and maybe I think maybe in the manual I did see something called a setting called busy. I might be just hoping that I saw something called busy, so I go in there and turn it off and this will go away, but don't know what it is. And to that other guy who is worried about he's not hearing anything on digital, I got into digital recently and I was shocked also about the lack of activity on it. I thought I'd be hearing, shatter all over the place, and I didn't. Maybe it's because I don't know how to operate it that well, but I was also shocked about how quiet things are. Roy, who knows a lot more about digital and monitors digital, might say otherwise, though. Might say he's hearing we're just doing something wrong, and he's just, and I'm on DMR, though, not fusion, or YHF, but I don't know if it's just really quiet. Is it Paul? I keep on saying Paul. Is it Roy?
Well, being confused for fall is a compliment, so I'll take it as that, Rich. I would agree with you and many other people. I have heard this repeatedly mentioned as I listen to digital radio, that people apparently got a very strange impression. I think they kind of felt that all of the old auto patch guys and such from the 1990s who made the repeaters the busy bees that they were had all gone into digital and were doing the same thing quietly in reflector rooms and talk rooms. But they're really not, unfortunately. Activity on digital talk groups, rooms, and reflectors are spotty at best. If you go to rather large and somewhat popular groups, you'll see a little bit more activity, but that doesn't mean you'll see a lot of activity. Just about, there is absolutely no talk group reflector or room that's active, you know, even say 12 hours a day. You're lucky if you can record something like about 2 hours of conversation in an entire 24 hours. Because I've kind of done it and come back and seen, you know, what was left, because it's I have it set up to record Vox, so it takes out the blank parts. And you have to accept it for what it is. The guys don't have long-winded conversations that much, and they have intermittent, sporadic type of conversations, even in highly populated. I think the more small focus type of topic-driven talk groups have even less activity in that they probably are simply there for one or two nets or group of people to do the same thing on a regular basis, but certainly not every day of the week.
But you do have the ability to listen to worldwide. That's what surprises me. I mean, you know, you can come up and try to listen to a talk group in Singapore. And that's the part that confuses me. If you're now, you know, able to listen to the world rather than just your local neighborhood, why aren't you hearing stuff at will?
Well, because a lot of people are either not on worldwide or not or listening, but they're not talking. A lot of hams listen without talking. You have to understand that worldwide is just a title, just an identifier. It's not a collection of different talk groups from across the world. It's it's one specific single talk group that's simply labeled worldwide. And so it has a vague enough identifier so that anyone would be curious about it. But my guess is what most likely happens with worldwide is people turn to it, turn it on, and listen, don't hear anything, and go about their business. And they either don't think of or don't want to throw out their call sign. So you would think that worldwide is enormously active. It's a popular talk group, but it's not terribly active just because there's no talk group that's incredibly active.
Is, for instance, you see labels like Schenectady Worldwide. Is Schenectady Worldwide the same talk group as Worldwide? Go ahead.
Yes, it is. Usually, I mean, you could call something anything that you want and include the word worldwide. I don't know if Brandmeister or the other networking backbones have copyright laws or anything like that on their mind. But for the most part, these are just local identifiers for the access repeater that's going to feed into worldwide. Once usually they mention that they're worldwide, it's the same talk group identifier. The ID for that talk group is the same in every area of the world. IDs are unique, so that even if you had a Schenectady talk group and it was only Schenectady, it would be a very unique ID identifier. That number would not be able to be used by any other talk group.
Who polices that? Who polices the names, or is it self-police?
It's policed to one degree or another by the organization that sets up basically the backbone. For originally for DMRs, it was called the C-Bridge, and a group managed it. They also gave out unique identifiers. As time went on, other groups like Brandmeister developed parallel networks. They policed their network. If you want to be linked, you can contact the powers that be and arrange for something like that. Many repeaters and or even Yaesu rooms have been linked to Brandmeister. So you can cross-connect. As long as you have a radio and a computer interface, you can plug one into the other. So the different Brandmeister manages Brandmeister. The C-Bridge is managed by those guys. Yaesu manages their own WireZX. The server is in Japan, and it's going to probably stay in Japan. And it's very difficult to kind of connect directly with their network. You can bridge it using radios, but you can't bridge it directly. So hopefully that's the answer you were looking for.
I was actually looking for that answer because it seemed to be a little willy-nilly to me, but if you're saying that, you know, Rochester worldwide, well, why would they put Rochester worldwide? Why don't they just put worldwide? Go ahead.
Well, I don't know why they would use that form of identification. I have seen things like this very commonly in DMR radios. And what that usually has to do more with is it localizes your access. So when you are looking for a channel and you come across Brooklyn worldwide, you know that's it's registered to a local repeater that you can get into Brooklyn and then use that repeater to then access the worldwide talk group. Whereas if you have another channel that says New Jersey worldwide, it means that if you take a trip to New Jersey and you need a closer DMR radio, this is set for a frequency of a repeater in New Jersey that also lets you access the worldwide talk groups.
And with the hotspot, all that is the north, correct?
Yes, the hotspots have made a lot of things unnecessary, and identifiers like that. I mean, there are still people who really like to use repeaters, and they have their DMRs hooked up so that they access repeaters, and it still works very nicely to do it that way, especially mobile repeaters where the car could be at different places, and there could be better places, better repeaters for different places. But it becomes somewhat redundant if you're using a hotspot. Then you don't even have to worry about repeater access. So you just go directly to that talk group worldwide and not worry about any repeater around you. It's a direct connection into the internet of all things.
Today I just found there are about 10 DMR repeaters out here that I never knew existed, which I think I'm happy about. I'm not quite sure yet. Anyway, I'm getting the new radio tomorrow, and we'll take it from there. And just a last question, Roy, is how's the audio sound coming from me tonight?
It's okay. The level is pretty good. I remember that you were having problems with low level. You don't have a lot of sibilance. There's not a lot of high end in that microphone.
All right, maybe I could do something about that in the future. Anyway, in fact, in the manual, I read to my shock that many radios coming out of, was it in the manual? I think it was, do have low power, you know, are underpowered, and that there's a fix with the capacitor you could wire into microphones to make a little better, which I'm going to try shortly. Anyway, so thanks, Roy. Thanks for answering all the questions. W2BC, please.
You're welcome, Rich. I guess it's ultimately a factor of what kind of inexpensive IC they're using as the mic preamp. I know ICOM has always sort of had problems with that. They've always, you know, you need to use an electrolyte to kind of give you a little bit more oomph to get through their mic preamp. And different radios have different levels of boost that they offer. I like the ones that kind of you can dial it in over a wide range, but some radios are designed with very limited gain controls. So I wish you good luck with the new radio. It's always nice to have a new radio. Good for you. Once again, this is AC2GS, and my name is Roy, and this is the Limemark Technical Net. And if anyone has any questions or topics they would like to cover tonight, please give me your first name and your call sign. Gosh, it's a quiet night. Bernard, KD2NKL, you told me you have loads of questions. Would you like to share one with us?
Sure, KC2NKL. So I guess my next question would be, I suffer from the delusion that people, this is more a process question than maybe a technical question, but it seems like on HF, the art of CQ is dead. You know, I can call CQ for 3 or 4 hours. I know I'm getting out, but no one answers. And I'm just wondering, is it because everyone, do you think it's because everyone's going to digital and they're playing with FT8 and they're switched off of just single sideband rag chewing to get as many contacts as possible? Is CQ really as dead as it is for me, at least?
Well, I mean, this is a good psychological question. I tend to think that the people who are going into FT8 really have very little interest in rag chewing. They're trying to wallpaper their walls, which is fine. They want to make as many quick, efficient contacts as humanly possible, which is fine. We all find different ways of expressing ourselves in this hobby. The problem is, as I mentioned, as far as repeaters and as far as talk groups, there isn't a lot of activity, unfortunately, all around. A lot of people have their license, but they don't really use it. If you talk to the guys at the ARRL, they will trumpet the fact that there is 750,000 licensed amateur radio operators in the United States. This is rather strange in that all the other large amateur radio populations outside of this country are actually declining. And I tend to think it's more preppers and people interested in backup frequencies. And so those guys will maybe buy themselves a bowel phone, put it in a drawer, and that's as far as their tech license goes. So you get a big problem with people willing to talk, and you know, hams are like any other human being. We tend to be a little on the clicker side. So you go down certainly to 80, and there are guys that have been talking to each other the same frequency, the same day of the week for the last 20, 30 years. If you try and CQ those guys, they're just going to wait for you to leave and go back to their conversation. So it's problematic. I find that usually 20 and in some ways 40 is a little less clickish, 80 and 160 more clickish. If you try hard enough, you'll eventually find some people. But it's a combination of lack of activity, lack of interest in actually engaging people, unfortunately, and, it's a problem. We all kind of get into that problem. you know, finding interesting people to chat with. I don't care that much where they're from. I mean, I'm kind of thrilled when I talk to distant lands, but I'm more interested in the guy on the other end of the microphone, you know, what he can tell me and what insight he can offer me. Okay, someone really has a noisy signal.
And WB2EAV.
Yes, Ed. You have something to add?
Yeah, first thought. Question. What frequency and mode has he tried? Based on what you said, he stands a much better chance on 20 or 40 either sideband or CW than a lot of other places for that very reason. I operate 20 and 40, and I have not seen what he has said. Second, if in doubt, Field Day is coming up, and that is an excellent opportunity to see how your radio is actually getting out, because Field Day is as close to promiscuity as you're going to get in ham radio. You throw your call out and 15 people are going to want to talk to you, right?
Well, you're quite right, Ed, and this Field Day is more open up than usual. You can operate Class D, and so other people can get credit for contacting you, and you can get contact credit for contacting them. I got the idea, though, from Bernard that he's more interested in rag chewing. He's not that as interested as touching base and making some points. He would like to sit down and have a chat for a while.
And that all boils down to what band and mode.
Well, we'll ask Bernard himself. My assumption is that he's talking about roughly the HF band, and he's talking about single sideband. But I might be wrong. So, Bernard, what exactly, what places have you been looking?
Sure, gentlemen. So, just so you know, I'm only in general class, so my frequency limitations are what they are. So I go on 80 meter, I go on 40 meter, and during the day I'll try 20 meter. Those are the three bands that I normally operate on. I do jump on some nets, and what I found on the nets is that my signal is getting all the way up to Maine and all the way down to Florida and South America. I've gotten contacts in Spain and Portugal without a problem. So it's not, I don't think it's a problem is my radio, although I have to be honest, my signal reports are always S6, S7. I never get an S5.9. You know, it's very rare. So there could be something that's going on in my shack or my radio where I'm just not getting out as propagating my signal as well as I could be. I've tried three or four different antennas, but it's all single side band. It's all 80 meter, 40 meter, 20 meter. You know, and that's basically what I try to operate. And I do it in the early afternoon, early evening, and late at night. And during the day, I can do it from 8 o'clock in the morning till 11 o'clock in the morning in hopes I'm getting something DX-wise, you know, overseas or anywhere for that matter.
Okay, very good, Bernard. So Ed, any suggestions of how to cajole the average ham into hitting that push-to-talk button and conversing with someone if they pass by and they just hear a stranger call out CQ?
Yeah, I have some thoughts. Thought number one, try just tuning around. Feel like a cheetah up in a tree waiting for his prey to pass by underneath and then pounce and see what happens. And then once you have them, see if they want to chat or if it's just slam, bam, thank you. Second item, you mentioned you only have a general. My comment is, unless you want to work that rare DX on some rockin' Antarctic Sea, you'll do just fine with a general. That lower 25 kilohertz is really only pays off for the rare DX, and I don't get the impression that's what he's going for, right?
Yeah, I would agree with Ed that a general license is perfectly good. I shouldn't give you any problems with binding people to direct you with. Again, the problem as I see it, and Ed might feel differently out of the many years of experience he has, that it's sort of difficult to kind of randomly find guys on the HF band. It's not as readily, unfortunately, you'll hear stories of kind of the same thing even on repeaters. I've read more than a few complaints of people saying that, you know, they travel outside of their local area. They take the car someplace, they have a radio in it, and they have, again, a radio, a repeaters list, and they twirl the repeater, and they throw out their call sign, and crickets. Because in some cases it's a kind of clicky thing, and people talk to their friends and only their friends, and so that's a problem. I kind of wish that we could get amateur radio operators to kind of stop doing things like that, but you know, people as they get older, I think they get a little bit more comfy with the people that they're used to. So it's difficult starting new relationships for many of these people, I guess.
KD2TRG with a comment?
Yes, TRG.
Roy, yeah, I totally agree with you. You know, I've been down that road. I've been down here since, I guess, back in March. I got my tech, and then I got my general a week or 2 weeks later. And unfortunately, because of the COVID, I wasn't able to go for my extra. However, I run a lot of nets. I run the nets on the K2BNL repeater. I've actually helped out Suffolk County Red. I've listened to you for quite a while. I've talked with Richie on numerous times and stuff. You know, as far as you do it, you have to listen, and that's I think one of the key things that the ARL, the FCC, everybody tells you. If you want to get into the radio and get into a bit of a rag queue, you have to listen. You have to listen to the conversation. You know, it's like anything else. You know, Harley guys aren't going to talk to guys on Rice Rockets. Rice Rockets, you know, as far as motorcycles, you know, guys that are into airplanes aren't going to talk to, you know, people that are into horses. You know, you have to find something that you're into. And as far as, you know, talking on the radio, it's the same thing. I've been doing a lot of stuff on, you know, Simplex lately, on 2 meter and stuff like that, just running around. And you find somebody, and they're more than willing to talk to you if you have something to offer, and if you have some type of commonality. And it appears to be like, you know, there are a lot of people out there who don't want to say anything because, like you said, there are cliques. I've gone upstate and talked to the guys upstate where I don't even think the guys upstate had licenses. They were very clicky and very rude to me when I was doing the K2H thing for the heroes for COVID-19. It is. You have to find what you're looking for. I've made plenty of contacts on, you know, between the digital signals and HF and stuff, but it is. It's just one of those things. I don't think it's dead because according to the gals over at ARRL, the licenses has gone up, especially since the COVID-19 thing, like 700%, I think, she told me. So people are getting their licenses, but whether or not they want to talk, sometimes you just got to drag that out of them. And if you find a common ground, you'll get a rag queue, and people will just, you know, they'll sit there and little by little, and you will. And next thing you know, you're in a clique, and you're part of that clique, and you sit there kibitzing with them. That's just my opinion. K2TRG, back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good. I agree with what you said as well. There's different approaches to getting rag tubes. There's the approach of pouncing, that I guess would be a descriptive term for what Ed suggested, where you listen around, you find something that interests you, and you throw out your call sign, and you try and hook one. Then there's Bob's suggestion, which is valid as well. I always tell people that it is best to listen a lot more than you talk on the radio. So listening to the surroundings, the flora and the fauna, and finding a group of people that you think you might click with, and then throwing out your call sign and hoping for the best, that's a good sign too. But I know other people who want to take a more active, aggressive type of a part in it. They want to plant their feet on a certain frequency and throw out a CQ. And, sometimes that works for you. Unfortunately, these days, I'm not quite sure. And, as Bob mentioned, there's been a lot. I'm not quite sure whether there's been a lot of licenses over this last 2 months, because as a volunteer examiner, I know we haven't been doing it because of the problems, and a lot of other volunteer examining groups have been kind of stymied. I know, as I mentioned before, that we have 750,000 licensed amateur radio operators, but I tend to think that an overwhelming number of them are not really on the air, which kind of defeats the purpose. But all good suggestions on the part of Bob and Ed.
Roy, one more thing.
Yeah, sure, Ed.
I have been operating 40 CW for decades and decades. And I occasionally get frustrated when I don't hear anything, I throw out CQ. In all those years, I should probably count on the fingers of one hand the number of times I got a response to a CQ.
Really, that few times?
Yeah, I find when I tune around, I find, like I said, you're in the tree limb over the trail to the watering hole, and you wait till the prey comes along and pounce. I get an excellent rate of return. But if I throw out a CQ, it's embarrassingly low. Another question. How much power and from the script, he said he used several different antennas, but if you're putting 100 watts into an antenna alongside the side of the house, you're not going to get a 5x9, you're not going to wrap the S meter around the pin anywhere. Back to Roy.
And to APG.
Okay, APG, one second. Bernard, do you want to tell Ed the specifics of your antenna?
Sure, be happy to. So the rig I'm using is an ICOM 7300, and the antenna I'm using is an N-fed 80 to 10 meter wire antenna that's from my house, starting at an elevation of about 18 feet that goes up to about 70 feet in the air at a 15 or 20 degree angle, and then cuts over the horizontally to another tree at an elevation of about 40 feet. So you can almost consider it a slightly inverted V setup, although it's more horizontal on the second leg than it is sloping down. It's just a very gentle decline. But that's the antenna I have right now. I have used a Comet CH250V vertical antenna, and I wasn't getting much luck at starting at 18 feet, going up to about, it's a 23 or 24-foot antenna. That wasn't working very well, so now that's why I'm using this N-fed antenna. This is the second or third wire antenna I've used, and this is the one that seemed to be...
All right.
Sorry, I didn't catch the last part of that. Can you repeat?
Ratio are you getting on that antenna? And more importantly, if you don't know, that's some way to go, an antenna tuner and SWR measurement.
Sure, I can answer that question. I do have an antenna tuner. I have the Rig Expert Model 55. I am getting an SWR with the ICOM in tune mode of less than 1.2 to 1 on every band. If I'm not using the built-in tuner, I'm getting 2.0 to 1 on every band, but I use the tuner the entire time.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, I am not cultural, unfortunately. And just as a total aside, that Comet antenna that you weren't that happy with, I looked into it for a friend who was considering it, and it was kind of remarkable that they mentioned that they redesigned, it's such an inefficient design, that they actually redesigned it so that it could dissipate the lost energy of the heat more efficiently, so it didn't burn up the components. So it only goes to show you that, you know, when you have to worry about overheating due to power losses that's designed into a structure, that there's something not too good about it.
And it wasn't a cheap antenna, and I could just kick myself for it. Back to you.
Yeah, it's a well-advertised, well-known, and I guess the ads look attractive, but you read the small print and, ugh. Dave, N2APG, you wanted to comment on this.
Yeah, hi, Roy and Bernard and everybody else. N2APG, it's Dave in Massapequa. I was heard Bernard's comments and stuff, and I my comment is that he is... He's obviously making the assumption that people are hearing him when he's calling out his CQ on the low band. You know, there's propagation, and then there's propagation, and then there's propagation. And sometimes, many times, people are not hearing you, even though you may be hearing other people on the bands. So the condition of the band is really... you know, the primary thing that's going to affect whether or not people are hearing him, and obviously if people are not hearing him, nobody's going to come back to his CQ. Just the fact that you're putting power into the antenna doesn't mean that people are hearing you. So, you know, he said he was quote-unquote getting out. He knows he's getting out. So the only way you could know you're getting out is if somebody's coming back to you and telling you that they're hearing you. So that's my comment. I don't know how much experience Bernard has on the low bands, but, you know, propagation is obviously a major factor. It can change minute by minute. It can change day by day, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that doesn't, it's just my comment. Don't assume that anybody's hearing you before you, you know, complain. N2APG, back to Nick.
Well, you're right, Dave. You can't make any assumptions, but I can understand where Bernard has repeatedly been able to log into the same frequencies at the same times for scheduled nets and such, and so, you know, he kind of draws a conclusion based upon that, which, you know, is a good approximation. I mean, unfortunately, there's probably one of the better ways to judge this is to go on to a website like WebSDR. They have a long list of different automated radio receivers throughout the world, many in the United States, and you can actually listen to your own signal in different locations and get a better sense of what kind of signal you're putting out. And there's also other things. There's Whisper, which is a software package that sends low-power digital signals and then gets received by people using them as well and posting them to a website. So there are actually ways of approximating what kind of signal you're putting out.
KC2NKO.
Yes, Bernard.
Yeah, I mean, you're making I'm making an assumption that I am being heard, right? I get it. I mean, I've talked to people, and I know they're hearing me, and I'm getting decent signal reports. But you're right. I have no idea. I'm looking at the WebSDR software right now, the website right now. And I'm going to give it a try because I really actually have absolutely no... I get the propagation problem. So I guess I just have to try the WebSDR. I always thought that it was my rig. So to make a long story short, I had a 718, and which I bought off of a used, and I thought, well, maybe the radio wasn't working or maybe my antenna was bad. So I replaced that with the 7300. And then I went through the multiple antennas, and I said to myself, this is me. This is me not knowing how to do this because it can't be all the equipment. So then I thought, well, maybe it's my microphone. So my wife was nice enough to get me the Pro 7, Heil Pro 7, which I just looked up a couple days ago. And I'm getting, when I do talk to someone, I'm getting good reports. I'm just
like I said, I just expected, maybe it's just a fantasy, I just expected when you call CQ, I don't expect to get an answer every time, but when you're calling CQ for a couple of hours, I expect someone just to, even if they're interested in a 20-second, just give me your call sign thing, just to at least respond. And maybe that's just a fantasy that is just completely wrong. I am also not the guy who honestly will be listening to a conversation between two or three guys and feel comfortable breaking into the conversation and throwing my call sign out there in hopes of joining what I know is a conversation between